Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo.
We're here tonight. It's Friday night. It's Friday night with George Dixon. He'll be joining us in just a minute from his lovely home in the rural upstate New York. He used to be down in the lovely Long Island, but he's relocated to beautiful upstate New York. He's getting just moved there recently, and he's getting settled in up there.
Yeah.
He's with us now. Let's just click him on.
Yeah. Hello, George.
Hello, how you doing, folks?
Good, pretty good.
Hi, George, how are you?
I'm doing fine, and I moved to Kinderhook, New York.
I said lovely upstate rural New York.
Oh, I live in Kinderhook, which is the home of our seventh president, Martin Van Buren.
Oh, no kidding.
Do they have a famous house there that he lived in or was born in? Or?
Yes, he did. And, you know, the understanding of OK, that came from Van Buren because OK was Old Kinderhook.
Oh, wow.
How about that? A little bit of trivia.
There you go. How you folks? How was your week?
I think we're on the grid right now. You know why? Because I didn't know that story, and I lived for almost 10 years in Van Buren, Maine.
There you go.
What do you think of that? I think it's one of the only towns named after Van Buren.
How do you like that?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Our week was very, very good, very busy actually, but very good.
That's great.
Okay. So, Leo wanted to talk a little bit about, who was that gentleman that you had mentioned that you
I want to thank you, by the way, George, for giving me those lectures on by Manly Hall.
Yes, and, very good material. Mm-hmm.
Oh, excellent stuff. I mean, this guy gets into all, he did over
Before you launch into something, please tell people who Manly Hall is.
I will, but I was just about to say this. He did 8,000 of these lectures, 8,000 in his lifetime, and over 40 years or so. And, these are...
Please identify him.
What's great is these are his earlier essays, which are, labeled 250 and 251 and so on and so forth. Identify who Manly Hall is.
Yeah.
Well, from what I got from my studies of Manly Hall was that he was a 33rd degree Mason. He
lived to quite a ripe old age.
There was something very famous about him. He was the grand historian or something of the Masons, keeper of the records or something. I don't know. But he was also a mystic. A psychic, and based on his remarkable some of those essays, I said, wow, yeah, some of those lectures, I have to agree, the guy was brilliant.
What catches your fancy when you read his materials? What do you like about what he's saying?
I like the tone of it. All right, the tone of the. I read it last night on the show. I read the essay Jesus Wept. On last night's program, and I read the entire lecture, 12 pages, and I loved the meter of the cadence of his words that he chose, and how he was able to take a very very complex topic of about the allegorical nature of the Bible. All right, or of all religion, of all sacred books.
Yes.
And tell you why they were allegorical and how they were all similar, how they all basically had the same moral tales. You know what I mean?
Just tell it to each other.
Well, what was similar about him, Leo? What was similar about him?
The Bible and what he was the Bible, the Quran, and the Buddhist works and all of these. What was different from them was that.
No, he asked you what was similar.
Oh, similar. They all had the same tragic tale. the prophets died in the end, you know?
Okay.
Jesus died.
Yeah, like Moses. Moses died. Yeah, well, he wasn't able to see the promised land, you know? And then he died with on Mark grave. And the Jesus was
died
on the cross.
Muhammad was stoned.
No, Muhammad was actually poisoned, according to that.
Oh, I thought he was stoned.
Yeah, he was poisoned. All right. And Buddha, there was another prophet, a Hindu prophet, or another prophet that was...
had a tragic end.
No,
like
yeah, horrible end. He was torn apart and
by dogs or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, no, he was...
Gandhi was shot in the stomach. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Gandhi was shot in the stomach.
Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Shot in the head, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he explained that this is the course of... this is the course. This is the price that one pays for Christ consciousness, which is the death of the physical world.
Body.
All right? Because once you reach that level of Christ consciousness, you don't fit in. Yeah, not only are you a threat to those around you and everyone, you're a total nobody understands you, and they you're a monster, you know, to many people, and that's and unfortunately those are the people that get assassinated and or die
killed violently,
and that's part of the part of the mission, if you will, that you undertake as you get closer to understanding the voice of God, right? And the voice of Christhood, which is that elevation of your spirit to the perfection of mankind.
Well, that's a hell of an outlook. It really is. To be spiritual, you must die. I don't believe that.
No, he doesn't die. No, you don't die.
Your body dies.
This is all an allegory.
Yeah.
Allegorical.
Yeah.
Right? And he says that in Lazarus. He mentions Lazarus and the 4 days. That Lazarus was dead for 4 days, and Christ came and resurrected him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that 4 days symbolizes the death. Okay. The phases of death, phases of life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
A birth, childhood, yep. Adulthood, and old age. That's the four posts of your life, mm-hmm. Right? So that's the allegory. And what happens is once you've reached that height of wisdom, compassion, in the proper way, and you've given so much to mankind, and you know, and you become complete. That's when you die, you know, but and move on to the higher, to the next level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all more or less a resurrection and reincarnation. Because another one that I was starting to read today, I read a few, but the other one that he has is karma and reincarnation, okay, considering karma and reincarnation. And he goes into that whole aspect that all religions and most all men, God, throughout mankind, believed in reincarnation, right?
Why? What is that belief, Leo?
What
reincarnation?
The belief in reincarnation is the belief that man has the ability to renew himself and
try again.
And it's a linkage to immortality. His immortality, right? That maybe the physical passes away, but the spirit remains, and the energy is always there, wandering around through the next adventure or the next, course that it has to learn,
mm-hmm.
And that's the way I see. That's the way I read that is that you don't die, you know, you're immortal, and your spirit is immortal, but the spirit is visiting. You know what I mean? Visiting this planet, visiting this physical dimension, and the reason for that is it wanted to either experience something, or it needed to experience something in order to move on, that's what it is.
And it did experience something, and that was a closed reality, being closed off from the outside world.
Right, Right.
And that was only a temporary thing.
Right.
But with the understanding that the completion, you know, will be had.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have a completion, but you also have, you know, it's not over. You know what I mean? It's not over.
What do you mean it's not over?
This physical world may be, but the...
Your journey,
what
you
are,
can keep going.
Right? Like I was reading the other day, I was reading this book on Paulinus. Paulinus. Was it Paulinus? Paulinus? The Greek philosopher who stated that he was a mystic and he was a scholar and so on, and he stated that the world, that the soul is outside the body. It's around the body. It's outside the body. That made a lot of sense because that's your Merkaba, that we were talking about.
The energy.
Mm-hmm. That's the energy. Your soul is the energy outside of the body, outside of matter. And what it's doing is it's directing your, what you're doing actually is creating or being or merging with the third dimensional matter. Okay, matter. Mm-hmm. He said it is soulless. It has no soul. It's just dead. It's until the your soul brings it to life. You know what I mean? It gives it meaning, gives it substance, gives it whatever. So in essence, you're reading this. You're feeling this. You know, you're putting your soul into dead matter. I shouldn't say dead. I should say like neutral. You know, matter.
Yeah.
It has no soul, and you're putting your soul into it. It's there to you're creating whatever it is around you by doing this, and because the soul is outside and the body is inside.
The energy of the soul just surrounds the body.
The energy of the soul surrounds it. So the soul is far, far, far greater, far, far more knowledgeable, far more mysterious than anything.
And how did it get trapped within a body then?
It's not trapped within the body.
It's not trapped in the body. The body is actually, using the body, okay? To experience.
And when it doesn't need it anymore, at least.
But using the body, you're restricted to its element, and, you know...
You need to be restricted. See, because you want to experience...
You've chosen
The five or six senses. You want to experience that again, or you need to experience that again in order to understand something at a higher dimension or a higher level.
Well, I agree with you there. It needs to be experienced again, but it needs to be available for you to experience it. And
matter is just that. It's matter. It's everywhere, and yet at the same time, it's probably nowhere because you're creating it. You know, it's something that's there.
You're bringing it together.
Right, you're molding it like the Genesis said, God molded man from clay. You know what
all
I mean?
Right.
That kind of thing. You're so basically, and then he it's like anything. We create this creature, which is ourselves, and then God blows. He creates this thing, and he blows life into. Into the creation, and that's what we do. Anytime we create something, we're creating life, regardless if it's made of dead matter. It's the spirit that we put into it, or the utility that we use, or the reason that we build something or create something. That is the essence of what it is. And once we no longer need that, and once we no longer want those things, we move on, and those images of those visions all go away. You know.
And where do you move on to?
You move on to the next level of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and you're continually rising to the Christ consciousness until you become the perfect human being. Really.
Right, but we got to get back. We got to get back on the spiritual level.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. On the spiritual level. Right. I guess, are we human or are we just beings, you know, at that point? Maybe beings. Entities. We're no longer human. We're entities. We're spiritual beings. And,
well, we're spiritual beings above anything else.
Yeah.
I want to go back, if we can, to reincarnation when I asked you about that.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And if nothing else, it's a chance to redo or a chance to complete something? So maybe
have something unfinished here that you need to come and do, whether it might be an emotional thing, could be
anything.
A relationship thing. It could be anything.
Something, and even it gets even into further into the poltergeist, or into the spirits that are still trapped within this this dimension, and yet without body, you know, and because something keeps holding them here, something is holding them here, and making them refuse to believe that they've passed on.
Well, you know, I've said this quite a few times, but you know, going back to my beliefs with reincarnation,
right.
And I've said that reincarnation was something temporary. That was something wasn't something permanent. And it's part of the evolutionary path that we've been on for the last 20,000 years.
Right. Do you believe that we have been the same? That, in other words, we live anywhere from, I don't know, one minute to, 100 years. So if we live that long, or any period of that, why are we coming back? What are we learning? What is it that we're doing? And is that the? I don't know how many times. I mean, I guess Thoth supposedly reincarnated, I don't know, thousands of times. All right,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, ourselves.
No, I don't think thousands of times. But reincarnation was put back in, and I do believe it's also connected with a precession of the equinox.
Right.
How a consciousness actually falls asleep, then wakes up again, and it's in this 26,000 year cycle that we go through.
Right.
And it was at the ending of the last cycle, when we were in that dead zone or the furthest away from the energies, where we actually fell asleep in a sense, or we couldn't comprehend. The knowledge that we would have, let's say, in a light period. And with reincarnation, it's understanding that this evolutionary experience in third dimension is just part of an evolution of consciousness. But what we've done is we've closed ourselves off from the mainstream. And being locked in that third dimension, we're more in our heads or in our brains, I should say, where we disconnect with the outside world. Now, it's understanding Thoth who gave us the ability, seeing that we were closed out from the outside world. He gave us the ability to read and write. That is, gather information internally. But not externally. With the understanding of reincarnation and karma, it's learning how to experience, this life or this experience, not only from a mental point of view, but also from an emotional point of view.
Right, I understand that, because if we don't do that, then we can't, complete the cycle.
Well, yes, but see, we have to complete the cycle ourselves, and that's what we've done is because we have our consciousness is speeding up, where we're understanding the different dimensions that our evolution goes through, from a physical point of view and a mental point of view, or a spiritual point of view, I should say. If nothing else, now is the time to get in touch with the emotional side of us, which is the unity of a connection that we have to the outside world, and that is with the body. So now we're at a point where we can disconnect from the mental holdings that we have and let loose to the emotional connections that is in touch with the outside world.
Okay, I'm with you there, George. I was just thinking that if I go back to these, I guess what I don't quite understand, I'm looking for this answer when I'm reading Manly's work, right? And I'm looking for this any sign that shows his any satanic or any malevolence at all in his writings. Now, these are his earliest writings, I think, because they're numbered in the 200s.
And in finding that, Leo, what would that tell you about the writings?
I don't know, but it's kind of like a mystery to me, you know? Like I'm reading a mystery book, you know, seeing who's at the end of this thing, who's writing this. And all of the legends around this man, or all of the hype around this guy, makes me wonder who he was, you know, and what was he really all about. And as I read his writings, I find that I very much understand where he's going with his lectures. I understand.
And when you say where he's going, what do you mean by that?
Well, he's talking about ascension consciousness. He's talking about the a truth seeker, and a person, and how people that are of this persuasion are people that are on a mission, right? They've established a mission.
Yeah.
And he said that we understand that once we connect, we have the option of connecting or not. But once we connect to that mission and make it ours, that we are seeking truth, that we are seeking understanding and enlightenment.
Well, you
this is a commitment to that route, okay, rather than closing off the world. You know, I'm trying to understand. Once you've made a commitment to that, all right, then you become more focused upon that, and all of the worldly stuff that goes around you becomes less and less important. In other words, money and wealth and great stuff, and you know, you're more when you focus more on what. On wisdom and try to understand the path to Christhood, then you become more less and less and less inclined to be attracted to the normal things in the physical world that we normally do, and to the extent he brings this back up to the prophets, where the prophets were all. Well, you know, they were in the extreme, and they died extreme deaths. And extreme, and each one dies ironically. I mean, the irony is dripping in each of these stories, because here is a man that was brought to save the world or bring a message from God, and he was destroyed, murdered, you know, by the people that he was there to help. And
well, you know, maybe karmically he had to do that to be an example.
But see, what it is he's not saying that Christ existed or this or that. All of these stories, he's claiming that they all have an allegorical quality, and showing that the road to salvation, the road to God coexistence, co-creation, okay, to where we are one with the Godhead again, then is worth far more to us than anything else of worldly value, all right? So we gladly eventually go to the extent of our death, go to our death.
Well, Leo, you know, I'm sorry because I haven't read the materials that you're referring to there. I'm not familiar with his work. But
that was wonderful. I'm going to give it back to you, George, after our break.
Yeah.
That one. But you know what? If you want, before I do that, if you get a chance, and anybody out listening there, in the audience right now, if you're interested. I read this particular lecture on last night's program, so it's in the archives for last night. And I read the entire essay. It was about an hour and 6 minutes or so long. So I didn't really make too much commentary. I just tried because it was a long essay, and I wanted to get it all in. So if you get a chance, check that out, and you'll understand where I'm going with this conversation as we're discussing Manly P. Hall's work. And especially the specific essay was number 253, I think it was, lecture 253. It was called Jesus Wept, and very eye-opening.
Well, like I said, Leo, I'm not familiar with his writings and so forth.
Right.
But what caught my attention about it is that, you know, it sounds like the same old yada yada yada. I mean, if you eat three squares a day, you know, you'll live to be a happy life. But you know, I don't think it's having to connect with a God again, because you're already connected with it.
Yeah.
And this is what I do believe that, you know, I'm just remembering things I already know, and yet I am connected with the universe. And understanding my connection now is not something that has always been. So, you know, if nothing else, I've always been connected with the whole, but now I'm just reminding myself, yes, I am, by looking at my body and seeing how much it's, the outside world is part of it. But, you know, it's taking, not for granted, but knowing that, you know, I'm a sentinel being having a human experience. And part of the elders told us about this, and this is part of the period that we're coming out of now, that we could see it for ourselves or be part of it, because you know, we are connected, and that Christ consciousness and just the thought is the understanding of, before you can move on and go up, you know, you have to connect again with the unity of the whole. Or the creator,
right.
In order to move.
No, that's right. No, I understand. And you know, everything that I've read, you know, over the last couple of years now on my Thursday night shows, I've always I started off with so much of the information that you gave me. You know, I got into I did a lot of conspiracy things and talking about the different elements there for quite a while, the different books that you gave me, and then from there. Then when Maria introduced me to the Agni Yoga series, I was just floored by that, and I love those books, and I read, I think I did all of them. I think there might be one that I did not do, and one of the 13 books, and then the stuff that we're on. It all seems to be just another logical rung on the ladder, because all of this stuff that I've read over the last few years on the air is all coming to me now. It's making links. I'm getting the links between the different works, and it's all starting to make a lot more sense to me as I read it through different authors, you know. And,
well, it's thinking differently. We're on a quantum level now.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
You know, everything is connected.
Right.
And the fact being that everything happens and anything can happen at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, one thing that I've been thinking about all week is, you know, in finding your goals or reaching your goals, the ability that we've had and we've been programmed is to mentally, you know, work on setting up what you want and going for it. Take the action, put time into it, and, you know, that your work will be the consequences of, you know, the goal you're seeking. But, you know, that's been an age-old habit, program that we've had, that with work and with effort, you know, our goals can be accomplished. But there's another route to reach those goals or whatever you want out of life, and that is actually through the emotional body, by just feeling it. and that will complete itself.
Yeah. No,
it follows, you know, it follows no logic, but it follows like within quantum laws of completing. If the thought is put out, it will find its mark.
Yeah. Well, again, what I wanted to go back to, which I found fascinating, was that Manly Hall was he was a mystic, all right? Considered a mystic, he was a fantastic scholar and philosopher.
Where did he get all these studies from?
Yeah, did he go
to direct sources or?
He channeled much of this stuff.
Oh, okay.
Well, Lila, does it matter?
It was just interesting to me as to where he got his information.
You know, it's kind of like a lot of these people.
Maybe not, it doesn't matter.
No, I think it is a lot of these type of people, because he wrote the history of this, of all secret societies throughout the ages.
Interesting.
Right, and he was just at 27 years old, okay? And so he had a remarkable handle on stuff that was knowledge.
And then
over the years, and he lived to be, he was born, I think, in 1909.
Yeah.
And he lived to be to 1990. So that's like, 80 years?
George, what's your impression?
Impression of what?
Manly.
I'm not familiar with his work.
Not so much.
Okay.
No, not so much. It was this was work that my ex-associate studied. It was my partner, Howard Metz.
Oh, okay.
And Howard studied his work for a while, and Howard passed away, and he passed the materials over to me.
Oh, that was nice of him. Sorry.
And I've had him in my archives for years, but... I think Leo brought up the Manly name, and I thought he might be interested in it.
Well, it was very nice of you to share it. Did you actually get a chance to read those lectures, or?
No, I didn't. No, I just glanced through it, and I think there was some reference to Madame Blavatsky on it that caught my attention.
Oh,
He talks about her. He talks about theosophy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He talks about. He goes into all. He's very, very astute on all religions, and had a real good grasp of their.
We'll have to find out more about his background.
Because I have a lot of historical understanding and knowledge, if you will. But it also was the fact that the reason that Jesus wept. All right.
When
he was in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Oh.
When he wept. Is because he is because of the overwhelming sense of frustration and almost hopelessness that the people that you are trying to get to help are about to kill you. Will not understand, cannot understand. Or if they do understand, it'll take, thousands and thousands of years, all right,
and they still don't
for
get
them
it.
For them to get it. And that was the frustration. That's why Jesus wept. And he made a comparison to in one of the great libraries, the Library of Alexandria.
Mm-hmm.
What was in that library was at the front of the library as you walked in was the statue of Cepheus, and Cepheus was the sorrowful scholar, the sorrowful scholar, and he was he was a very sorrowful, and he was weeping. It was a dedication to the original founder of the library, the first of the librarian, and there was over. Several hundred thousand manuscripts and books,
all destroyed.
That were all destroyed by the. By the barbarians, and the Romans, and they destroyed their culture. But the key was is that this is the sorrowful. Cepheus was the sorrowful because he had so much knowledge, to
share,
and the truth. He had the truth with him of everything, and yet.
And what was the truth, Leo?
I don't know. I mean, it was in hundreds of thousands of volumes. I don't know what it was.
Well, but what was Jesus' truth?
Ah, there you go. Jesus' truth, just as Muhammad's truth, just as Buddha's truth, just as all of their truth, was that man could rise to Christhood. Man can reach perfection, as Buddha can reach.
And how do you do that?
By living the way that Buddha, Muhammad, and Christ did.
By following the truth. By
going
to the truth through your connection
to God.
To God,
the
universal.
Every human being has. You don't need a translator.
That link. We all have that connection because it's within us. It's what we're made of.
Well, yes, but what they were able to do is take you right to the source and ground out that aspect of life. And that aspect of life is the harsh and the brutality of living in a polarized world where have good and bad.
Right.
Now, what do you do with a bad? I mean, where does it end? Just like, how bad can it get? What Christ did was he said, hey, look it. Now, if you look at it this way, if you take that evil or whatever you have, turn it over to me, and I'll take care of it for you. You don't have to worry about it, so just continue on your path. What he did, the salvation that he had, was taking that negative aspect of this reality, instead of burning it up inside of you, giving it out to somebody who would ground it. Now, understand also that Jesus is that physical aspect of our life, of being human, of living a human life. And he actually lived a human life and showed that, look, he paid the consequences, but he went through that. So he went through that, so we don't have to. But understand, the point was connecting with the heart. It's through the heart he did this, and it's through the heart.
Yeah, no, I don't think.
I don't believe
so. That's what
I'm just saying that he was the Christ, though. That would ground out that aspect of this third-dimensional life the spirit is caught into. And this is only a temporary net that we find ourselves in our evolutionary spiritual scale of
this is where I have a fundamental difference with religions,
mm-hmm.
is that they insist on putting a figurehead, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, or whatever, in front of you, all right?
You're just as important.
And all of these prophets, what these prophets actually said was, I am like you. You can be like me.
That's right.
God. You think I'm God, but I'm not. What I am is you, okay? You can be this. I'm just a guy like you.
Yeah? I'm showing you the way.
But I'm showing you the way. Don't put me in front, because I'm not. You are the one. You can be this way, okay? All you have to do is follow this road.
There you go, Leo. There you go.
I'm not.
But in a general mass, you know, how do you express that? The only way, the true way you can express it is through actual living things that play out the role of what has to be accomplished in order for you to, experience
that. But the essence of that was Jesus wept. That's exactly what it is, because the frustration that you have, that he experienced, the hopelessness, the despair, and yet at the same time, the optimism and the joy, the possibility of an entire world understanding the true path to their Christ consciousness, okay, and to ascension. And if you look back at these prophets, they were looking at thousands of years before mankind would be able to rise to the level of consciousness, all right, that would accept these their teachings as truth, all right, for the truth that they were. And this is why these prophets are important and considered so valuable. But what they've done and what these religions have done...
They've
hijacked religion, right. They've hijacked God. They've hijacked these prophets, okay, and placed them on pedestals, made idols of them, all right, You know, and they said, we are not gods. We are not. We don't believe in idols. We don't believe in false idols and false gods. There is only one God, and that one God is our God, and he's your God. I'm a son of God. You are a son of God. Lila's a daughter of God, and that's what he said. And then all of a sudden, you know,
somebody a few hundred years later decides that there's some money to be made.
Exactly.
And a way to control people.
Well, yeah, and the church said, well, if we put this guy up front and say he's God, okay, then
so that's why you have the Trinity, Leo.
Because
Jesus is the God.
But you see, in Stanley
and
Hall,
the Holy Spirit,
Manly Hall, what he said is he didn't. He says there was really no Trinity. The Trinity was an established thing that was brought up by people who were trying to understand break down the or veil, if you will.
I don't think I really believe that.
Veiling the truth, okay, and they created the Trinities, okay, the three, the you know, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and that is one of the fundamental disbeliefs of Islam. They don't. There is no Father, Son. They don't believe in the Trinity. They believe in only one God. All right, one God. They say Jesus was a prophet, just as Muhammad was a prophet,
mm-hmm.
but they don't believe that there was anyone before God. Okay, and God the Father is all one, and there's no threes. Okay, and if you look in the Buddhist religion. Okay, the Buddhist religion states that you become one. You become God. Okay, you become one with God in your nirvana state. Okay, and you can reach that. You can reach that state. And then, but only Christianity really states that there will be, that they put Christ as a God, all right, the Son of God, but nevertheless the God, all right, and that God, Christ himself, is the disciples and the early writings.
Jesus never claimed to
he
be
He never
God.
Claimed to be God. Okay? It was Peter who
decided that'd be a good thing.
That would be a good thing. It would keep the thing rolling. Okay?
Well, let's go back to the initial point of, you know, his purpose and so forth. What was the purpose? And it goes back to salvation, the same as Mohammed.
It's allegorical. That's what he's saying. These are well-written stories, okay? And if these lives did exist, that's fine. But the fact was is that these stories of these prophets are repeated
cultures.
In different cultures, but they've established
different players.
Yeah, but they've all established followings, you know,
mm-hmm.
and interpretation. But what he was trying to do is weave them together to make people understand that it's the same story, just said differently over
that's right.
and over again.
To get to the main source, which is God, however you refer to him as.
What's up?
Get to God, however you refer to him. That's what George said.
However you relate to your God, whatever that God is. And,
right.
Above yourself.
But where all the wars and all the problems arise is when, you know, my God's better than your God. You know what I mean? And I'm going to prove that. And
I want something that you have, and I'm going to take it under God's banner by fooling the masses that it's a godly thing and make them afraid they won't go to heaven if they don't take it.
That's right. They had to put Christ as an idol, okay? In order for people to follow.
That's right. That's right.
Say, okay, he's God, because people don't understand that they're connected to the one God, but instead they always feel they need a medium, you know, to work through. That's why Catholics believe in all these saints.
Well, it's because of what we've been told to believe, Leo.
What's that?
It's what we've been told to believe.
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course it is. We're connected. We're as connected to God and space and time and as anybody else. Or anyone ever was. And,
even the extraterrestrials.
Extraterrestrials. What's that?
Even extraterrestrials.
Yeah, they have the same God.
Yeah.
Didn't he create the universe? I would think so. Oh, you know, it was an interesting thing. I was listening, as speaking of extraterrestrials, that there's a movie out, and they had something at the United Nations where they had this mock thing where different people played different extraterrestrials, and it was like a mock extraterrestrial in the United Nations. I heard it. It just caught a piece of it on public radio.
Say it again.
There's a new movie out, and I don't know what the movie is. It's something like a Star Wars.
Yeah.
And they were using the United Nations, the chamber there,
yes.
And different groups of people played different groups of extraterrestrials.
Oh, really?
And they had like a United Nations thing.
Of extraterrestrials.
Yeah. And Whoopi Goldberg was the moderator.
Oh, geez.
But,
that sounds good. I like Hollywood.
But you know what? I think that's getting us used to something.
Reverend Will, is that Race to Witch Mountain? Is that the name of the movie?
Oh, I don't know. I only heard a little piece of it on public radio.
Race to Witch Mountain might be the movie, though.
So I had no idea what the movie was. It was. I was driving in the car. I was coming back from the hairdresser or going to the hairdresser, and it came on, and I thought, oh, I wonder what movie that is and what are they talking about?
Yeah. No.
That's what I love.
I love when
Hollywood does stuff like this, because if nothing else, it plants new seeds into consciousness.
Oh yeah.
And now with the way things are speeding up, you know, we are actually manifesting or materializing what our fantasies are, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me that you know, it's like the belief in Christianity or any belief that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a mainstream of people who do believe it and has materialized a reality of that.
Right.
It's like a dream, but it's a living dream. And you know, once you start things flowing, it's got to work itself out. And it's like water, you know, reach its own level. But you know, it's anything and everything is possible, and it does have. It does manifest.
Oh, that's true. I agree with you 100% on that, George.
I'd like to see a more of an open mind, I think, dealing with the extraterrestrials, but also the truth about how we are connected with these civilizations, you know, outside our solar system, you know, this is knowledge that we've had for thousands of years, but here again, it's like what they did with the church and with our beliefs. You know, they program it and they manipulate to their
mm-hmm.
own likings.
Well, it'd be very interesting if we have more contact with extraterrestrials, and it'll be interesting to see if it's finally acknowledged and it comes out. You know, it comes out of the closet. Everything else has come out of the closet. Don't you think it's about time the extraterrestrials did?
Well, I think it is out of the closet, but right now it's just trying to control it. And we've talked about this before. And if nothing else, Hollywood has jumped on a bandwagon, and I'm sure with some of the other controlling populace that we have, and actually try to build something where they can control it. And, you know, it's kind of scary when you talk about some of the tension that people are experiencing and protesting against the war and no food and no jobs and so forth. You know, it's controlling that anchor. And, you know, it's funny how this week, you know, in Congress, you take a look at what's going on with the banking situation, with
right.
AIG and so forth, that, you know, all the pressure right now is put on the people who got that money. But understand that, you know, where the rest of that money is, that's only a drop in the bucket compared to the money that was lent out. And understand it's all in the hands of the bankers. And even the Secretary of the Treasury, he's a Federal Reserve man. So, you know, understand that, you know, the banks are still in control of the situation. But right now it's just trying to keep the pressure under cap as much as they can.
Do you think that it's really going to happen, that they're going to get it back?
Well, I'm sure if nothing else, they're going to have to deal with it. But, it's also the other ramifications, around the world. AIG, I think, I don't know if it was a Swiss or a French bank, invested heavily in some of their securities. And when AIG went out, some of these banks were close to going out. Well, the government had to come in and step in and give them that money that they lost. And this was an outside source, just to keep the banks afloat.
I find it very interesting that AIG could gamble and lose with their scheme, and they all were rewarded with bonuses. Mr. Madoff there is in jail for doing the same thing.
Yeah, well, what comes around goes around, and now they're now it's being exposed. And we talked about the Fifth Night; all this stuff came to the surface. So right now they're going to have to deal with it. Just like your senator there from Connecticut, Dobbs.
Oh, Mr. Dudd.
Yeah, he's in a hot seat, big time.
And he deserves to be. He's a crook.
Well, yeah.
You know what's great? They're bringing back Elliot Spitzer's coming back. George, you'll appreciate that, being a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Isn't it interesting that they took him down right before this whole AIG thing? So, because he was looking into them, I guess.
Yeah, he was ready to break the story there.
I'm sorry, who are you referring to?
What's that?
Who are you talking about?
Elliot Spitzer.
Oh, Elliot. Okay, yeah, Spitzer, right, yes.
He was about to break that AIG story that they were crooksters, and they...
Yeah,
they,
he was ready to indict them all. He had them by the short hairs.
Right, yeah.
They got rid of him.
Yeah, and they destroyed his career. But he's coming back. I saw recently a couple of things on him in the news, and he may get back there to the...
Because he is the only one that knows the ins and outs, because he's already studied it.
Yeah.
Well,
I
think they're going to need him.
I got a feeling they're going to get him back in the State House.
The problem, all the shenanigans that's been going on for years, let's go back 5 years, it's going to be exposed for what it is. It's not going to be hidden.
He saw it.
On an individual level.
He was trying to get at the root of it.
He figured out that tangled web that nobody else did, and he knew that they were crooks.
Yeah.
And he was about to do something about it, and then, of course, he had his own vulnerability. He was destroyed. Somebody knocked him out of the box.
Well, if nothing else, like I said, whatever was hidden is coming to the surface, and it's being exposed for what it is.
I've been trying to figure how we got around to from Manly Hall to Elliot Spitzer in this conversation tonight, but
I think it's
it's a remarkable
journey.
And it explains a lot about the scope of this incredible program.
or the rambling minds of the three people that are on it.
The rambling minds of the LA School Show.
There was a story about the rambling rose. We're just the rambling minds.
Yeah, really. And
a song about the rambling rose, rather.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the alien movie.
Okay, you like that. I thought about you when I was listening to it. I said, boy, George will appreciate this. But I couldn't get what the movie was. So you'll probably figure it out, George. I don't know too much about science fiction movies and that sort of thing.
Well, with UFOs.
I bet you Billy would. Oh, you know what I heard the other day? For those of you listening, I'm going to reference a good friend of ours, Bill Marshall. That girl that was that just died from a head.
Natasha Richardson.
Yeah.
Yes.
She played in The Handmaid's Tale, that movie.
Oh, that was Bill's favorite.
That was Bill's absolute favorite movie. Bill Marshall, for those of you who don't know, was a cosmobiologist, and a good friend of George's and mine.
Astrologer.
What's that?
Astrologer.
Yeah, but he thought that was beneath him. He was a cosmobiologist.
And we
always had to call him the cosmobiologist on the radio.
We weren't allowed to call him an astrologer.
No, his astrologers were for schmoes. He was a cosmobiologist. And he did all our political predictions, and he had all kinds of great stuff. Bill was a great guy. But what happened was today, I heard that she was in that tale. And I thought immediately about Bill, because that was his favorite movie. He said, I forget exactly why I thought of him, but this is what Hollywood's doing. And they create these iconic movies,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's funny, the power that those iconic movies have for actors and actresses, because once they play an iconic role, like this particular woman did in Handmaid's Tale or any of her other movies, they become those roles or those characters almost become immortalized, you know, in the minds of people, and kind of a whole different life themselves, I don't know why I brought that up, but it just kind of played into the immortality of man.
These subtle
connections to an actress who passed away that was in Handmaid's Tale that reminded me of Bill, who passed away 2 years ago, that, you know, also from a head injury. You know that?
There you go.
Yeah.
He fell and hit his head. Same kind of thing, and blood vessels ruptured, and
yeah.
he had brain damage, and that's why he died.
Well, besides Bill's favorite movie, I'm anxious to see what Hollywood puts out. And, you know, in following UFOs, I keep an eye to it, an ear to it, as much as I can. But, you know, to be truthful, it's the same old yada yada, and there's not... there's not the new stuff coming out that I thought there would be. I think there's a lot of people trying to grab onto old material. And, you know, I'm looking for something something that touched the psyche, not the physical world. And that's what I'm looking at. I don't know. We'll see what comes out of this.
Yeah.
The Mayans talk about the time that we are going to connect with our cosmic neighbors. And, you know, I do believe that we already have, but I think on a mass scale.
I think it'll be in a more public way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
waiting
for that, when it really becomes acknowledged that we are.
Right.
But understanding how politics and how we society works here, I'm looking more at the second and the third wave of the onslaught of whatever is being thrown at us. Or whatever is going to be shown. I think the first part is the control that's going to come in and try to control it, like they're doing now. But I think it's going to be a control.
We have about 1 minute left, George, and I to the show, and I wanted to maybe I can tie this together with one thing, and with what Manly Hall was saying in that lecture. And how everything ties itself together to create to clarify the pathway to Christ consciousness. All right, it was great because of all of the stuff that you were able to give to me throughout these years. All right, this knowledge that you've shared with us and shared with me, I was able to connect to each and every one of them, and it made a lot of sense to me. So thanks a million, George. For illuminating me and Lila and our audience again tonight.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. So, good night, folks. Thank you for joining us. And, George, I'll be talking to you real shortly, okay?
Okay, then.
Talk to you real soon.
Good night,
God
George,
you,
and
folks.
Thanks for being with us.
Good night, George.
I know.
Good night.
Bye.
And good night, folks. I hope you enjoyed our talk.
And thank you. And tell your friends about us and listen to the archives.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.